Blog Talk Radio.
Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Hello, how are you doing today? I hope this finds you feeling healthy on this Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. This is Dave Cuthbertson here with Nate. Nate, how you doing?
Doing just fine, Dave. Happy to talk another week of baseball. Anytime you're talking baseball, it's going to be a good night.
I love to hear it. Call-in number is 929-477-2759. Again, 929-477-2759. And if you're with us at the beginning, you can't make it the whole show, feel free to check us out on the podcast at Sports City Chefs. You can also go to sportscitychefs.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Click subscribe, do the whole nine yards, or really the whole nine innings. Well, I say the whole nine innings, but let's be honest. We learned this week that's not necessarily a true baseball game, right? Oh, boy. But before we jump into that, Nate, let's take a look around the league, give you some quick scores. Right now, I'm just looking around the score sheet. Only one game has gone final right now, with the Pirates winning 2-1 over the Royals. We got a number of games in progress right now. I'm currently keeping track of the Yankees, who are up 5-1 on the Orioles. And my big takeaway from this one is the Yankees have 12 hits, but they've actually plated some players with this one, so that's a nice change. You know, the Twins are not having a great season. They're down 4-5 to the Indians. The Twins are 7-14. I don't know. I did not see that coming. We've got the Blue Jays, those young, hot Blue Jays, up 7-3 on the Nationals. We've got the Mets and the Red Sox playing a game with the surprisingly hot Red Sox with 2 runs and 4 hits to the Mets, 1 run and 7 hits. And the Athletics up 2-1 over the Rays. Braves up 2-0 on the Cubs, two teams that are 10 and 12 looking to inch their way closer to 500. And we have the Marlins and Brewers tied at 2 apiece, with the Brewers sitting at 13-9. Marlins 10 and 12 have not faded into oblivion, as some might have thought, and others still hoping they cross that 500 threshold, who thought they would hold on to what they had last year. Cardinals and Phillies, pair of 11-11 teams, with the Cardinals up 3-2. Rangers ahead of the Angels, 3-1. Rangers sitting at 9-14, really hoping to turn things around. And you have the just really sad Tigers tied with the White Sox at 1. And the Mariners and Astros looking like a game that just got underway, but they are on the top of the fourth despite it being 0-0. But I do have to also mention that we've got the Padres and Diamondbacks tonight. Rockies and Giants, and Reds and Dodgers. But I don't think there's any doubleheaders out there, Nate, so it looks like every game's going to go nine innings, which will make it a full game. But for me, I want to hear your big takeaway from the last week before we jump into a topic. If one thing really stuck out to you this past week, what was it for you? For me, it was certainly the Bumgarner no-no that wasn't, the seven-inning situation. Was there anything in particular in this past week that that stuck out to you? Because I just cannot wait to rant about that.
I'm really enjoying the rivalry that is the budding rivalry. I don't want to call it a rivalry, but the budding competition that is the Padres and the Dodgers. You know, you got the Dodgers who defending World Series champs. Right now they are tied for the best record in baseball with the who thought that the Giants were coming after that title. But, you know, you got the Dodgers. Everybody knew they were going to be there, and everybody's expecting the Padres to be there. And every time those two teams have gotten together, it's almost been must-watch baseball, and we got a lot more of that this past weekend with Tatis and Bauer putting a new chapter in that book. I don't think you can call it a rivalry yet, but if this keeps going and this happens for the next couple of years, it could be the next big rivalry in baseball.
I completely agree. It's been a blast watching those two teams go back and forth. My only problem was I forget which one of the games was one of them that ended up being 5 hours long, and it was still only a 9-inning game. That's my only gripe with it. But as somebody who grew up a fan of Yankees-Red Sox games, that I think in a lot of ways led to the whole rule where pitchers can only – where they led to the whole mound visit thing, because – those games would go forever because you'd throw three pitches, get a guy out, mound visit, let's talk about the next batter. It was constant. But those games, those certainly have a feel to them that they move quickly. They move entertainingly. I guess that's the word I'll use for it. Those have been great. I hope we get a lot more games like that. It'd be really awesome to see a bunch of matches like that, especially down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you mentioned the old Yankees-Red Sox rivalry and why the Major League Baseball now limits mound visits. Nobody was better at eking out a rain delay than Joe Girardi. He could slow walk a game with the best of them, and I hate him for it. And I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to do it with the Phillies a couple of times here since he still has holding on to his job there. One other team I want to highlight real quick is the Pirates. A team that coming into the year I thought was completely rudderless, and look at them now. They're hanging in there. Game over 500. They won tonight. They took it to the Twins over the weekend. They beat the young and exciting Royals today. Do the Pirates actually make a run at this season? I don't know.
How dare you mention them as a surprise team and just gloss over the Royals like, oh yeah, and then they play the Royals. Like they're another team that I look at. It's like, wait, what? They have they're 14-7. They have the best winning percentage.
You're right, they do. and they just lost to the Pirates.
Well, okay.
Hey. Young and exciting, and whenever their young guns get up there, look out.
I mean, do you ever look at a team like those young Kansas City teams, the Pirates, even if you go back to the Nationals a number of years ago, where actually I quite frankly think the Blue Jays are right now. I mean, do you think those teams really have much of a future, or do they have to harness it now? I mean, I love the Kansas City story. I love anything coming out of Pittsburgh too. I mean, that story is great. What's funny about the Pirate team this year is they've got a negative 9-run differential, and that's a stat I never used to really pay attention to, but I find it very interesting. But yeah, they're giving up more runs than they're scoring, but they're game over 500 and they're fun.
Yeah, they are a lot of fun, and I mean, hey. The only number that matters at the end of the day is, the number in the box score. Did you score more runs than the other team on that given night? Another team to look at that's got the same thing going on, the Oakland Athletics, also sitting there at 15-8, winners of 13 of 14, or did they get the 14 of 15 after they left Baltimore? I mean, and their run differential, I believe, is also negative. They got it positive in the Orioles series, and then the Orioles turn around and laid a 6-run beatdown on the salvage the series. I think that put them back under in the negative run differential again.
I mean, I have to say, I mean, you look at these, the guys who are doing it for Pittsburgh, right? You've got a couple guys with 4 home runs. You got a really good pair of infielders in Philip Evans and Colin Morin, but. I just think it's going to take a whole season of these guys being consistent. And it worries me a little bit, but I don't know. You see a team like Pittsburgh come along every so often. They'll be the flash in the pan. I hope a team like Pittsburgh will be able to package something nicely and get a veteran towards the trade deadline. I mean, and I feel the same about the Royals, although I don't worry about the Royals' youth as much as the Pirates. And one thing real quick, Nate, real quick.
Yeah.
You said the only stat that matters at the end of the day was what wins?
Do you have more runs at the end of the game than the guy that you're playing? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So wins, right? Well, I know one person who'd beg to differ, and that's Scott Boras. You know, he cares about the individual stats.
Well, right. But, you know, you need the individual stats to get to the team stats in the bigger picture. But
depends whose spreadsheet
you're
looking at.
I have a love-hate relationship with Scott Boras.
He is a bit of a necessary evil. If we could really do a whole show looking at baseball contracts, and we might as well do that at some point. But I really wanted to take a moment to highlight those young teams who are, you know, like I said, they're coming into the day. Kansas City was 14-7. Now they're 14-8. But you know, you still got your Dodgers at the top. I really did expect San Diego to perform well. I mean, it's not like they quietly turned the team around. I think once Machado arrived in San Diego, you know, that signaled the distancing from, you know, almost I was going to say a decade, but no, it feels like a lifetime stretch of lack of success for that team. They did the youth movement part. They got the veteran. And I don't just mean like what I was talking for the Pirates where you try to do it for a year. They're doing it for a stretch. And I hope San Diego's relevant for quite some time and fighting with the Dodgers.
Absolutely. And I mean, if San Diego, you know, they push to the top there. So now if they can sustain that, you're going to have San Diego pushing the Dodgers. And then you always know that the Giants – this year is a classic example. The Giants aren't supposed to be good. They're supposed to be like a 500 team. They're supposed to be like, you know, a little bit over. Maybe they push for a wild card, but probably not because they're getting old. But here they are tied with the, you know, they're tied with the Dodgers and they're tied with the Royals now for best record in baseball. If you saw that coming at the beginning of the year, well, I think you're lying if you honestly claim that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know,
to flip it
on its head, you look at the NL Central, and I don't think anybody had the AL Central. I don't think anybody had the AL Central playing out exactly the way that it is right now either.
Well, I truly thought the Twins were going to be just have the depth. I just really thought they were going to have the pitching depth, but it hasn't. Hasn't been consistent. It's been consistent, just consistently bad.
Yeah. It really has. And, I mean, if we were jumping back to the AL West, and here's another guy that maybe we don't highlight today. Maybe we don't highlight it today, but here's a future show idea, a future show topic maybe that we hit on. We have to address Shohei Ohtani and what he's doing for the Angels.
I was just thinking that. You saw that he was the first pitcher since Babe Ruth to start a game as a pitcher while leading the league in home runs?
Yes.
That might be my new favorite stat.
Oh, absolutely. And this is exactly what everybody wanted. When he was coming over from Japan and he got posted, this is what everybody wanted him to be. And it's so exciting that we finally have that. And to put him in the lineup alongside the perennial MVP that is Mike Trout, Angels, you got to make the playoffs this year. You just have to. There's no excuse not to.
You know what's more important than the playoffs or the Angels? They have to get some attention. I would love to actually see these guys play.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of MLB TV. We can all tune them in as long as you don't live in LA.
It's been, you know, it's been fun watching him to do what he's been doing, though. He and there's definitely some use. I was just talking to you before the show about Ronald Acuna Jr.'s 281-foot blast.
Oh, yeah, just an absolute bomb into left center field.
It's been fun watching these guys, but I just can't help but think keep thinking back to that Madison Bumgarner game, and that he gave up no hits in seven innings, and it's frustrating because when it was over, my first thought was, well, is it that hard for the league to just do the right thing, right? That's the simple way of putting it. It's maybe even oversimplifying it because we all understand there's things like CBAs and negotiations and give and take, and nobody wants to unilaterally exercise power, which we've seen in other leagues. I mean, you know, a guy like Roger Goodell, I don't even think would tinker with just changing some type of outcome like that. But it's frustrating to me because I remember when Jim Joyce infamously took the perfect game away from Andres Galarraga, it was very clearly the last out of the game, and the league could have said, no, it was very clearly the last out of the game, let's just give him the perfect game. And we've talked a lot about robot umpires, and I kind of put this in the same bucket, where it's just all about getting the call right. And I think the league could just step in here and say, you know what? Now that it's actually happened, we realized we were wrong. I know that it's really hard. I think the league almost has, and really sports in general have a Arthur Fonzarelli, they can't say the word wrong thing going on. I don't know if that's a reference that the kids will get, but it's really sad that they can't just very simply correct, because Nate, I just very simply ask you, let's say they did it. Let's go back to the Andres Galarraga perfect game that wasn't. What would be the downside? What's the literal downside of it? And then versus what's the upside? And I just think there's no downside. And you could say the same thing about the no-hitter situation. There's no downside.
Yeah, I don't know that this is terribly related or terribly similar to that, to the Galarraga perfect game. I totally get where you're coming from, and I do agree. There would be nothing wrong with the league coming out and be like, you know, the umpire blew that call, so, you know, we're declaring this a perfect game so that he can have his moment in history. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he has his moment in history. Everybody knows that the umpire got it wrong, and yeah, at the end
in
of the 40 day,
years, will
that... I think so. As long as there's highlight reels floating around there, they'll see it. It'll become a footnote in history. It'll one day be the subject of one of our trivia questions to close out this show. But I kind of get where Major League Baseball is coming from with this. I don't agree with what they're doing, but I'll tell you why. So this whole concept of perfect games, no hitters, having to go nine innings, this came out of an edict by Major League Baseball back in the 90s, where there actually was a committee or a commission formed that made the declaration, hey, in order for it to qualify as an actual no hitter or an actual perfect game in our book, it has to be nine innings. And you know what? That's all fine and well, because a game is official after five, four and a half, if it's, if you're the home team and you haven't come to the plate yet and you've got the lead. And that, you know, that's where Major League Baseball set their rules so that you have these, you know, you'll have games that get rained out and they'll basically be like, you know, we could make this up, but they've played five. We're going to call it here. They don't have to go any further. Now, if they want to say, hey, you know, a five-inning no-hitter, we don't want to consider that a no-hitter, even though, yes, you did pitch the entire game, and yes, you did allow no runs to be scored, and yes, you did allow no hits. I get the edict there, because going three times through the order, going nine full innings and not allowing a single base runner or not allowing a single hit, that's a truly unique feat. I know I looked it up a couple of years ago. I don't know what the number is off the top of my head right now, but I want to say it's somewhere in the 30s, maybe high 20s for the total number of perfect games all time. So, like, we're talking about rare stratified air here. If they want to keep that preserved, by all means, keep that preserved. Now, why I have a problem with Major League Baseball not giving Madison Bumgarner the no-hitter here is because this whole shortened game, the seven innings, wasn't because of weather. It wasn't because, you know, something weird happened that the game got shortened. This game was officially shortened by a rule change by Major League Baseball. This was Rob Manfred coming out with one of his stupid, silly, we need to expedite these games rule changes and saying doubleheaders now are only seven innings. Well, okay, Major League Baseball, if you're going to set it and limit it to seven, then that's a full game. Like, you can't now turn around and suddenly be like, oh, yeah, you don't get a no-hitter because we did not allow you to play nine innings. And what happens in this situation? Let's say Madison Bumgarner, you know, they go, what if that game was still tied at 0-0 and they go into extra innings? And now they got the guy on second base. That guy from second base could score without Madison Bumgarner allowing a hit. So now what's he going to do? He's going to lose the game 1-0 while also allowing no hits. And Major League Baseball is going to be okay with that? Right. Yeah, you're right. It actually has happened. But, like, that, how are they okay with this? Like, all these rule changes, and now you have this situation, and Rob Manfred's still going to come out and be like, nope, doesn't count. It's a no-hitter that actually isn't a no-hitter. Come on. I fully agree with what Brandon Hyde, the manager for the Orioles, said when he was asked about it. It's like, he pitched the entire game. He pitched a shutout. He allowed no hits. No-hitter in my book. Good call. I fully agree with that take on it.
I have to just really quickly mention one of my favorite historical tabs was a number of years ago, 1964, when Ken Johnson of the Houston Colt 45s, he was beaten 1-0 by the Reds, but the Reds didn't get a hit. Just one of my just favorite footnotes in history that a guy did throw a no-hitter and lost. But you know, I've thought about this no-hitter thing, and the best counter-argument I heard was actually by Jim Abbott of the Yankees, who was a one-armed pitcher. He would throw the ball. He'd keep his glove tucked under his arm stub, I guess. I don't know. I hope that's not too offensive. But he kept it under his arm, and he would throw the pitch and then take the glove, and if the ball was coming to him, he'd use it to catch whatever was hit. And he earlier this week said that, you know, the first 21 outs, so that would leave the remaining six, which would be innings 8 and 9. This first 21 outs, that's something. I mean, that's an accomplishment. Don't take anything away from it. But he did point out that those last six outs, the 8th and 9th inning, where the tension really truly builds, is something else. But I thought about that, and I think he does absolutely have a valid counter to my argument. But this goes in line with a lot of the resting player conversation. And I would imagine, and I don't know, I don't have any science to back this up, but I would imagine if you're going into a game, if you throw – I'm just going to make it simple. I'm going to make it a scale of 1 to 100. If you're throwing a pitch with, you know, an effort of 100 on every pitch, let's just say you'll wear yourself out at some point. I don't think when guys are throwing 150 pitches in a game, back in the – really before the 80s even, you would see guys throwing, you know, hundreds of pitches, not hundreds, but 100, 150 pitches in a game. I don't believe they were throwing every pitch with the same amount of effort as they are now. And quite frankly, the batters were different then, and there were a lot less statistics to break things down. Now, in a seven-inning game, I like to believe that you're putting slightly more effort into every pitch that you're throwing now, and you're more likely to fan out after seven innings. Now, I would have been curious, and I don't know the answer to this, Nate. Tell me if you know, but if the game went to extra innings, if it went a full nine and he finished inning 8 and 9 with a no-hitter and then their team won, would that have been counted as a no-hitter?
I have no idea. That would be a great question to submit to Rob Manfred, actually.
Let's see if we can get him on the line. You know, earlier I brought up a name that you have a love-hate relationship with, and I've been dying to blindside you with this one. So if I'm Scott Boras, this is a terrible argument, but if I'm Scott Boras, do you want your guy pitching one of these seven-inning games? Because now you know that your guy can't throw a no-hitter. And even in the tiniest little bit, that takes something away, right? Do you want your guy throwing a game that's not really 100% a game? You know, I if you have a guy who could go out there any day, a Garrett Cole, a Jacob DeGrom, Jacob DeGrom, who seems like he could throw a no-hitter anytime he's out there, would you want them to not pitch on a seven-inning game because you can't get can't get a no-hitter? I understand this is kind of almost a silly or bogus argument, but that's somewhat the point, is you can start to make these silly or bogus arguments about those games. I mean, should they count as a full game in the standings? I just think it truly devalues the game. Should it count for 7/9 of a game? I don't know. I just really don't like that seven-inning rule, and I think this just proves that it's not a true baseball game. It's just not. If you're going to do everything else at 9 innings, then it's not. If you're going to do, you know, what if in hockey they were like, hey, if you're going to play back-to-backs, you're just going to do 2 periods for those games. Like, even if you do in soccer sometimes, they'll play 2 games. And I know you know soccer better than I do. I think it's called a derby. You'll have to tell me.
Oh,
you're
talking about the derby? Like the rivalry game?
Derby, thank you. Yeah, right. Or different situations where you have aggregate scores. It's not just one game. I mean, you know, why not just do that? Combine this?
You're talking about
the
Champions League and stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, where
you have your aggregate scores. Why not just do that? Have 2 different games of 7 innings and tally it up, and whoever does the best in the combined morning. Like, they're just...
I think, Dave, I think you may have dropped out, but if I'm still on the line here, I get what you're saying. I totally think that this whole 7-inning doubleheader thing, it just annoys me that we basically have to invent little league rules because they want to try and bring in these – they claim that it's addressed to the younger fan group, and I just really don't see it. But to your question about – back to your question about Scott Boras, and do you want your guy pitching in those situations? I think that the answer to that is yes. You want your guy going out and pitching every game, because when you're doing the negotiations on those contracts, you're negotiating the body of work. And that's something that Boras can and will raise in his negotiations. He'll be like, look, yeah, MLB doesn't recognize that as a no-hitter, but we all know it's a no-hitter. It was a complete game shutout with no hits. So, you know, and you look at the rest of his body of work, we're talking about a guy like a DeGrom throwing that. Like, you're really going to tell me that Jacob DeGrom's not going to get those last 6 outs? Now, of course, he's not going to get the last 6 outs because it's so rare and difficult to do, but it at least leaves that conversation open. So I think Boras, yeah, but you do raise a good point that this is very much something that these pitchers can bring to the table in their contract negotiations. Now, for a guy like Madison Bumgarner, you know, he's on his way out. So anything that he can add to his resume at this point, it's more for his potential future Hall of Fame candidacy. But if it was a guy like I'm trying to think of a quality young starting pitcher that we could throw out there that is still in his arbitration or pre-free agency eligibility. You know, that's something that it matters more to. I think that matters more to the agent than if we're talking about a guy that's already working on established long-term deals. Walker Buehler, that's who I'm looking for. Let's say that this was Walker Buehler doing it instead of Madison Bumgarner. That no-hitter, I think, or potential no-hitter that wasn't, I think it probably matters more to Walker Buehler's agent than it does to Madison Bumgarner's agent.
You know, from the evil sports agent perspective, and I always love to view things from the sports agent perspective, that doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't. What matters is you set the precedent, and that's what, you know. I know in the legal world, the precedent is everything, and you've now set the precedent that it's not a real baseball game. And I, the more I think about it, I actually don't hate my proposal of you combine 2 7-inning games and count it as one. I mean, it's equally ridiculous.
Well, you would definitely change the way that those games get managed, because right now, like as it is, you've got the guys that are the managers are basically throwing it out there, and you're saying, okay, I need my starter. Normally, I want my starter to go 5 or 6. Now that it's down to 7, you're basically telling your starter, like, hey, give me 3 or give me 4, and then I can turn it over to our bullpen and we can just shut it down from there, and I just need to win this game 1-0, 2-1. Like,
Nate,
I don't need to throw up 5.
Nate, you just invented the Yankees. You're laughing, but it's what I've been watching ever since they had what we called Rosomo, which was Rafael Soriano, and I think, you know, bridging all the way to Mariano Rivera. And, you know, in the Yankees, there was a period where they had Andrew Miller in there, too, as a very effective guy out of the pen. You know, I think the Yankees almost fell too in love with having a bullpen of guys who could go out there and just shut you down innings 5 through 9. You know, now, as I'm talking out loud, you see Mariano Rivera ruin the Yankees because he turned it into an 8-inning game. And then you say, okay, well, I only need 4 and 4. So if I get a starter to go 4 or 5 innings, then I only need 3 innings to get guys out. And then you just kind of piece that together with a couple cheap contracts and you moneyball that, which the Yankees have the ability to moneyball it by paying everybody $1 million more than everyone else. So,
yeah,
you know,
I don't think that that's quite the spirit of moneyball.
Yes, but if you play Moneyball, and like I said, you literally just shift the decimal point to the right once for everybody,
yeah,
because you can. You know, that's I don't hate the idea of potentially having some type of salary cap, just because I think it would make the sport a lot more fun. But at the same time, I mean, you do see this. We started at the top. You do see teams like Kansas City, you know, being a force. I think – I don't really think – you know, look, ever since the Jake Peavy years in San Diego, I don't really think – and I mean young Jake Peavy. They haven't really done anything, and nobody expected much out of them. And the same with the Pittsburgh Pirates, whereas you look at other leagues like the NFL, for instance – you know, every year you see Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, you know, Peyton Manning for a number of years. You'd see the same old hats at the end of the playoffs, and it almost had an NCAA tournament-like feel where, oh, yeah, it'd be cute. You know, it's in 1A school that you haven't really heard of, or an Iona or a Siena kind of makes it into the second or third round, and then eventually it's going to be Duke, North Carolina, Michigan State. In football, you've got Green Bay, the Patriots. You know, again, traditionally I'm speaking, you know, whoever Tom Brady is. But, and then in baseball,
assuming Duke hasn't run into UMBC.
That's true. Very good call. But in baseball, I truly feel like parity in baseball surpasses just about anything else. I mean, it's pretty wild if you think about it. I mean, over the last, you know, it's frustrating to say this coming off a year where the Dodgers won the World Series. Granted, it was a 60-game season, but I take nothing away from that 60-game season because they all played 60 games.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Some guys didn't quite.
True. I don't know. I think putting something like a salary cap in baseball might not allow that parity to work as well, because once you put a team like the Royals and the Yankees on even playing fields, no pun intended, because they're not on even playing fields because that's baseball, you just won't see the same you'll see different advantages for a city like New York versus Kansas City at first. I just don't think baseball will allow it to happen. But I was just, you know, talking about the seven-inning situation. And it's just, it's one of those many frustrating rules that we have in baseball right now. And you know, I wish they could construct teams a little bit better to kind of rotate players around. I just can't get over the fact that coming into today, the Yankees, my Yankees, the Bronx Bombers are hitting 203. It's embarrassing. It's just
Well, you put some hits up on the board tonight. I mean, you're currently leading 5-1. I think you've got 12 or 13 hits so far.
I, like Brian Cashman, I try not to be a slave of the moment and not look at what's just happening today. I mean, it's the sum of all parts. If we win this and then go lose the next two or three, then who cares? Just like I didn't want to get too pigeonhole myself too much with talking about the Dodgers and saying, oh, yeah, small market teams have a chance. Meanwhile, the Dodgers just won everything, and everybody thinks they're going to win everything for the next 5 years, unless the Padres can really punch them in the face a few times. But, Nate, what I really wanted to ask, what I really want to go to next is looking at team construction. You know, looking at how the Yankees are constructed to win championships, and that's what the general manager of my New York Yankees talk about. But I want to ask you how you construct a team like the Rockies, because, you know, if you work on that resume, I mean, I'm not sure if you love what you do. I love what I do. But if you don't, or if you know somebody who doesn't, they can always submit a resume to be general manager of the Colorado Rockies. And, boy, is that quite an interesting job. What do you think of the Rockies and their GM no longer being a partnership, and what they'll do next?
I think if I'm a budding GM, unless I'm a guy like Dan Duquette, I wouldn't touch that job with a 12-foot pole. The Rockies have fallen way off a cliff. They have very little to nothing to get excited about. They are one of the worst teams in baseball this year. And I think the fact that they made the move to fire their GM now, like, what we're, 20 games, give or take, 21, 22 games into the season. So we've played 3 weeks of baseball, 4 weeks of baseball, and you're firing your GM now after you let him trade away your most important player in the last 5 or 6 years. Like, the Rockies,
what's even crazier, I don't want people to forget, in addition to trading Nolan Arenado, the third baseman, they also traded away, $50 million, which is just really weird.
Right. They helped the Cardinals out with the salary on it. Like, you let him negotiate that deal, and then you turn back around and then fire him 3 weeks into the season. At least let him play it out. Like, if you're going to change managers, change the GM. Yeah,
when he goes to the owner and says, "Hey, I'm going to pull the trigger on this trade," the owner says, "No, you're not. Please go away."
Right. You either fire him before the trade, or you at least let him get, I'd say 80 games, 81 games into a season, see if maybe he had an idea. Maybe he was this evil genius that knew what he was doing all along, and he actually built something. And once you get like a substantial sample size, then you can pull the trigger. I mean, yeah, we're 20 something games in. The Yankees are one of the worst records in baseball right now, but nobody really expects them to finish fifth in the AL East. We all know that Stanton, Judge, LeMahieu, these guys have track records. We know they're going to hit. You still have Gerrit Cole, Corey Kluber,
Jameson Taillon as your pitching staff, the Yankees are going to crawl out of the cellar. The Pittsburgh Pirates are not going to be playing 500 baseball all year. The Kansas City Royals, as much as we're loving what they're doing right now, they're not going to sit at the top of the AL Central all year. The Giants are not going to be at the top of the NL West all year. We're 20 games in. We're an eighth of the way there. So, you know, to pull the trigger off of that sample size, I think is a little ridiculous. You want to pull it after a quarter of the season? Okay, that's fine. You know, now we're talking, you know, substantial track records here. But I just don't get it. To let him trade away your franchise player and then fire him a month into the season, like, what are you doing? You clearly have no idea where you want to go. There's not much in that farm system to get excited about. So if you're a potential GM, why would you want that job? How much leash are they going to give you to rebuild the franchise that's always rebuilding because nobody can pitch in Coors Field?
You know, if I'm – I mean, one thing I'll say is there's – how. Let me ask you very simply. I mean, there's, you know, how many GM jobs in baseball? There's how many GM jobs in all of sports? I mean, there's you know, 30, obviously, in baseball and, you know, roughly 120 in all of sports. And I believe it was the Cleveland Browns who hired a couple of MLB executives, and I think the Mets at one point had hired some NFL executives. So I kind of am enjoying the thought that if he can be a GM in one league, he can be a GM in another, mostly because on paper that sounds insane. And I just love when people do insane things like that that they shouldn't. Like Theo was able to win. If somebody told a young Theo Epstein, "Hey, you're gonna win a title for both the Red Sox and the Cubs," you would get him a nice, comfy white jacket that keeps his hands away from anybody. But you look at what the Rockies
have. Wait a minute. Let's not pretend like the Browns and the Mets are exactly at the forefront of competent franchises when it comes to their history here.
Again, Mets were in the World Series in the last 6 years, and maybe it's just the fact that the Yankees haven't, you know, sniffed a World Series. Well, they sniffed the World Series. I shouldn't be dramatic.
But
they
haven't
been on the show. Yes, you know, it was the first decade since like the 1910s or something that they hadn't been in a World Series. But, you know, back to the Rockies real quick. You know, I looked at I love looking at the top 100 prospects list for baseball. It's one of my absolute favorite things. And I can't say I recognize any of the players that the Rockies have in the top 100 prospects because there's only one guy. And it's a 19-year-old outfielder, so you're not going to see that guy play anytime soon. And if you look at the two largest contracts for the Rockies right now, I believe it's Charlie Blackmon and Trevor Story. And then there is a ginormous drop-off to Marquez. And, I mean, it just says to me, what exactly do you have with the Rockies? You know, I don't even know at this point how much their owner is willing to spend. If you get a GM in there who's able to convince the GM, like, hey, we need to just clean house. Well, the problem is, you know, what do you have to trade? I mean, that's one of the frustrating things is, I mean, you got to have – got to have something, or you got to have to draft well. And really in baseball, it's more important to develop than draft. You know, in other sports, you know, both everything is critical, but, you know, sometimes you'll see players not have the greatest coaching in the world and still succeed. In baseball, I think highly underrated is how important your double and triple A coaching is. You need to really revamp that whole organization from top to bottom. And if you want that kind of project, or if you don't have the experience and you want to put your fingerprint somewhere, I'd say go for the job. But it's a blank slate. You need it to be a blank slate.
Yeah, you know, the more that we talk about this, the more that I do kind of I do kind of back off that I wouldn't touch it with a 12-foot pole, because there is another element of the Rockies that make it more attractive than if you than say we were talking about the Mets job, or I guess we could throw the Nationals in there. Not that either of them are in position to be changing GMs anytime soon. But the thing that's unique about the Rockies is that there are no expectations ever. It's perfectly okay there to be a 500 team. It's perfectly okay there to be a 100-loss team, because their fans are going to show up, because beer at Coors Field is cheap and it's a beautiful ballpark. I don't know if you've ever been. I managed to get out there back in 2019 with a couple of buddies of mine, and it is absolutely gorgeous. Like, I can see why fans want to just be in that ballpark. But you know, you don't have to build a winner to keep your job there. You can just is basically like, hey, you know what? Surprise us with a competitive team every once in a while. And the Rockies had that. It wasn't that long ago. You had, you know, we mentioned Trevor Story. They had Nolan Arenado. They had Carlos Gonzalez when he was good. They had some decent guys who could actually, you know, they could pitch a little bit. And the fact that they were pitching in Coors Field, the Rockies actually, if I'm not mistaken, the Rockies actually were in the World Series against the Yankees in the mid-2000s, were they not? Wasn't it around 2008, 2009? Was there a Yankees-Rockies World Series, or am I imagining that?
Oh, man. I don't know if they ever played the Rockies specifically.
Well, I might have to look that up.
Yankees have been to so many World Series, man. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah. Enough of that crap. But,
I have
you know,
to.
The point is, like, maybe that is the GM job to kind of break in if you're looking to break into baseball as a GM. Yeah, they were. Rockies were in the World Series in 2007. So, you know, maybe that's
so hard to believe.
The way to go if you're a budding GM. Like, maybe Sig Megdahl, who's the primary assistant to Mike Elias in Baltimore, if he decides that he doesn't want to keep following Mike Elias around from franchise to franchise and wants to do the job on his own, that could be a nice little landing spot for him to cut his teeth a little bit. But,
so, yeah, I mean, you look at – do you believe in baseball you can instantly turn things around? Because I'm going to just reel off a couple of looks here at the Padres, right? I'm just going to look at them very quickly. You know, going back to 2011, right, they finished, and this is strictly because I like to look at things relative to their division. I'm a true believer in all sports. You play to win your division, and then when you get in the playoffs, you do your best. Not sound like a fourth grade teacher, but let's go to 2013. They finished 16 games behind, 17 in 2014, 18, 23, 33 games back in the division in 2017. By the way, they were fourth out of five that year, finishing with a 71-91 record. Not even the worst team in that division. And then the following year, they did finish last, 66-96, finishing 25 games. Next year, 70-92. That was 2019. Again, 2019, 2 years ago, they finished 70-92. And now I look at the Padres, and I think they can do it. But I think they can. I really think if everything clicks, I truly think they can run deep into the playoffs and it can win the World Series. I'm really buying into the Padres. But with the Rockies, you have a blank slate with some key things missing, and you know that's tradable assets. So they're not going to turn it around. But I think it was the Nationals. A number of years ago, the Nationals didn't really have anything. They ended up getting Strasburg and Harper in back-to-back drafts with the first overall pick. And it just really changed not just the tone, but the direction of the franchise. And in a way, the Nationals almost lucked out that they lost Strasburg for the season, because that allowed them to get Harper and just change the tone of the franchise. Granted, they made another horrible signing. I think it was Jason Worth. I only remember his name because I would call him Jason Worthless. Like, I feel bad to say that about a guy, but that didn't work out. Real quick, Nate, I just got to give this note as we reach the home stretch of this game or of this show. Vlad Jr. just hit his third home run.
I was hoping you were going to mention that because I just saw that a
goodness
little too.
Goodness gracious. And the funny part of that is you know, I got the notification on my app here. Vlad never did that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Tearing the cover. You love when these young guys are tearing the cover off the ball. And I think
saw
something. I can't say what game it happened, but I saw something earlier this week. And this happened, I don't know if it happened, if this occurred earlier this week or if the incident or if the incident happened last week and I just saw the alert about it late. But there was a game, it was the exact same date. Fernando Tatis hit a grand slam or hit two grand slams.
Oh, two grand
in
slams.
One inning.
And it
say
was
that?
The same date, right? As,
yeah, and his son went off for two home runs in the same game.
That's just in the same date. Was like, you know, something,
yeah,
20, 30 years later or something like that. It's just, it's beautiful. When that's one thing I love about baseball that you don't see typically in other sports. You know, you do have your Steph and your Seth Curry, son of Del Curry, and then, you know, his brother's playing pretty nice. But, you know, in baseball, you know, you got Ken Griffey Jr., Bobby and Barry Bonds. You know, despite what you may think about
them. I was
going
to say, you better mention the best hitter in baseball. Well, the best power hitter in baseball history.
The best guy to put the bat on the ball with surreal talent and maybe a little bit more. But you do have those wonderful, you know, father and son or brother type moments or. I'm sure maybe you'll see something like that, you know, in hockey at some point, but that's because they're crazy. And it's hard for me to bring hockey into it because I'm not terribly well versed on it, but, baseball,
hockey, you had the Stahl brothers all playing at the same time. You had one in New York, one in Pittsburgh and one in Carolina.
I think the Niederbauer brothers and for the Devils too at one point.
Yeah.
Or no, they were in Anaheim, they were on the West Coast at one point. But really, Nate, my overarching point here is I love seeing that thing about Vlad and the stat you brought up about Tatis, and how you can just link these things through time. And that's my favorite part about baseball is you know, as often said, you go to the park and you expect to see something you've never seen before. And yet with baseball, you see something you never expected to see before, be it a unique event or something that was historical and builds off it or, you know, something that just touches you right in the sentimental value.
Yep, it's the best sport ever, exactly for that reason. And it's America's pastime because everybody goes to the park. And there's always something about every individual game that you're going to make a memory and you're going to hold on to for the rest of your life.
Now, Nate, I would be wrong if I didn't point out that we are doing a show on a Tuesday night when we normally would on a Thursday. And Thursday is the NFL draft. And I'm not going to pretend that I don't have equal love for football, basketball, and baseball. Really trying to get more into hockey. Ow, I'm a Nets fan, so, you know, I've been really more into it lately than when, you know, Devin Harris and Brooke Lopez were the future. But, you know, speaking of the future and the NFL draft, it did have me wonder. I got to ask you this question. I need to know this question. Just give me a name. If you were, other than Mike Trout, please. Other than Mike Trout. If you were starting a franchise, give me one pitcher and one hitter that you'd love to start your franchise with. Take age heavily into account.
Shohei Ohtani, because there I'm covering hitter and pitcher in one guy.
All right, an extra roster spot. I love it. I'll take your next two picks.
Actually, let's see. Young pitcher, I think I'd probably go with John Means off the Orioles, not to be a homer, but, man, has he turned out to be a heck of a pitcher. He, like, when he broke out, he came onto the scene 2 or 3 years ago, and he pitched well above his peripherals. He did. He had some great raw numbers, but the more you looked at it, you're like, okay, this guy's probably going to tap out at maybe he's a number three, which is fantastic. If you get a solid number three, you need to be happy about that no matter where you find them, because starting pitching is the rarest commodity in all of baseball. But all he's done this year is just go out and mow hitters down. And if he's going to keep developing the way he's developing, I would love to build a franchise around John Means. And if we're talking hitters,
Which Blue Jay?
Bo Bichette.
I love
just
that
because
answer.
I love his name.
him, Vlad, just the answers the Blue Jays. I love that. I wanted to hear your answer on those. But one thing I had to make sure I touched on is, you know, as much as you love baseball, Nate, I wish I could take your love for baseball and really just pass it on to everybody. And really bring what felt like a truly passionate world. I remember growing up with the home run chase and baseball being everything. And now it's frustrating that the game seems to have such a slow pace. And at the end of the day, Nate, you know, these guys are still going to get paid their money. They're still going to get the TV contracts. The TV contracts are still going to go to baseball, and they're all still going to get their money. There's not going to be a salary cap. You're going to see guys with, you know, if you look at the Trevor Bauer contract, what is his? I think $40 million a year, or for the 1 year. Now, that's an exception, don't get me wrong. But one day it will be the truth, and I just can't help but go back to what I've been saying this week about Scott Boras and how it's a business. And I don't mean to de-romanticize baseball, but one thing that Barry and I touched on at the end of last week when I was on with him while he was filling in for you, and real quick, I got to say thank you, Barry, for filling in. We miss you, Eric, this week, but we look forward to having you on next week or in the future. But it is a business, it is a sport, and it's frustrating to look at all these team building and all the construction, and your job is to go out there and win the game. Again, Herman Edwards, you play to win the game. I don't have a problem with, you know, a guy just going out there doing his job and coming back and getting his paycheck sometimes. I mean, it's also a job. It's a game in that it's a competition. But I really don't have a problem with players not going out there and having fun. If you go out there and don't have fun, and collect your paycheck, the only reason they're paying you then is because you're good at what you do. And I have to say, there's a part of me that really respects the guy that just goes out there, does the grind, and moves on. Again, not to de-romanticize baseball too much, but we're coming to the close here, Nate. Real quick, just got to give a shout-out to Sport City Chefs. Check us out again on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Sport City Chefs. I'm going to close out by saying my favorite thing. I have said once, I've said enough for a lifetime, and for the last time, I wish you all a very pleasant good afternoon. Nate, take us home.
I'm going to close this out with my trivia question. Well, this will be more of a trivia sentence. We talked about Madison Bumgarner and his no-hitter that wasn't. The last time in Major League history that this happened was in 2006 when Devon Hanseck for the Red Sox no-hit the Orioles in 5 innings on a rain delay. Until next time, check us out. Check out the website. Check out the blog. Stay hungry.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night. Enjoy the NFL draft. We'll see you next Thursday.
Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, chefs. Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, chefs. Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, chefs. Sports City, Sports City. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon.
they well in tune. Bloom like a flower in June. Superman versus MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Yeah. Cabin. Todd.
Woo! Connecticut.